Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is New York State Senator Gustavo Rivera from the Bronx. And Senator Rivera is going to talk to us about the victory of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So, Senator, when she won, were you surprised?
I think that I would be lying if I say I was not. It was a shock for folks all over the spectrum. Certainly it was a surprise, but it was a very pleasant surprise.
Wow. So do you know Alexandria?
I've met the lady a few times. We have a lot of mutual friends and a lot of folks who have been part of my campaigns over the years, including some of the folks who were right there, right at the beginning of my senatorial career back in 2010, were part of her campaign, either volunteering or working as staffers. So, I've met the lady a few times. We're not close, but I certainly look to her as an ally in the Bronx, as far as it relates to getting some progressive things done in this borough, and I'm looking forward to working with her.
So your districts do not overlap, am I correct?
That is correct. Her district is in the East Bronx, and it crosses over into Queens. My district is wholly contained within the Bronx, and it is all the way on the west side of the Bronx.
Yeah, she immediately became a star, a big star across the country. She was on TV and national TV, and she was in high demand.
She is still in very high demand.
Right, I'm sure she is. Let me ask you this. There was a Twitter war yesterday between Joe Crowley and Alexandria. Does that amount to anything, do you think?
I got to be honest that I don't know all of the details, but I will tell you that there is a, you know, we have somebody, this is a district that is overwhelmingly Democratic. The likelihood of somebody winning on a third party in the general election is very unlikely. And there was a clear mandate for the people of that congressional district to send Alexandria to be their representative. So I have no doubt that she will be the congresswoman for that district, that she will get sworn in, and that we will be doing a lot of good work together across the Bronx.
You know, it still amazes me how a virtual unknown, even though I'm sure she has been involved in local politics, how she could beat somebody as entrenched as Joe Crowley. It just boggles my mind. And the question I've got for you is, even though she's a superstar right now, once she gets into Congress, do you think there's going to be some kind of a resistance towards her with the leadership? I mean, they were so sure that, you know, Joe Crowley was going to possibly be the next speaker. So will Alexandria face a lot of, you know, resistance and hostility once she gets in Congress, from your perspective?
Well, the first thing I'll tell you, Cynthia, is that when people over the years have sat down with me to ask me, you know, when they want to run for office and they want to be candidates, they ask me for some bits of advice. And there's one bit of advice that I give every single one of them, and I believe it to this day. It was something my father taught me. It's all about the work. So in the case of Alexandria, you're right that she was fairly an unknown as it refers to political circles and electoral circles, but she did the work. She outworked, out-hustled, outlasted the Congress members' campaign, and was able to connect with more people, communicating a very clear moral message across the district. Now, as far as her work once she becomes a legislator, well, there's a couple of things. First of all, any person, regardless of how smart they are, regardless of how they got there, need to recognize that there's some limitations that are going to exist because it is a collegial body that requires for you to get other folks on board. That on top of the fact that it is a difficult place. Congress is a difficult place right now with a lot of people who are just the worst type of representatives because they don't really want to see the legislative process work. But a lot of it has to do with who is going to be there with her, right? We don't know the blue wave that we've been talking about and that we've been seeing evidence of all across the country. We need to see what that's going to result in. She might have just a few more colleagues that are of her same stripe. She might have a dozen colleagues that are of her same stripe. And a lot of it is going to depend on what the – I mean, I do agree with you in your underlying question that there is something that the Democratic Party needs to do to better engage this more progressive and liberal wing of the party. We need to recognize – I mean, I've always been on that wing, so I know that I've kind of clashed a couple of times in a friendly and respectful way with some of my colleagues in the Democratic Party to make sure that we are more progressive, not only in our words but our actions. But I think that she is smart enough and savvy enough to get in there once she understands the legislative process, and depending on which colleagues she has, I am very much looking forward to seeing the work that she can do, and how she can kind of really pull the party in all honesty, in a more liberal direction, in a more left direction.
She is certainly to the left of many, both candidates and incumbents.
Oh, yes.
The party structure itself is kind of like conservative, with banking interests and so forth. So do you think that by the force of her personality that she can change things in Washington?
Well, I tell you, I'm also a political science professor. One of the things I tell my students all the time is that they would be shocked to learn how much interpersonal relationships have to do with policy making. So you have to both know what the rules and norms of the institution that you're working in are, but also it has to do with the kind of relationships that you can build. And this is why I go back to saying, the folks that she is going to have as potential colleagues, I mean, right now she is, as you mentioned, she has become a national star. She's been traveling all across the country using, correctly, I believe, her newfound focus on her ideas and what she's saying. She's bringing attention to a lot of amazing candidates all across the country. So, she will, I believe, again, that she is smart enough and savvy enough to understand that relationships have to have a lot to do with what ultimately what can one can achieve when a legislator, and that she will do that when she gets there. She will establish the relationships necessary to get some good stuff done.
I think that social media has changed the paradigm. For instance, before Twitter, before Facebook, if a newcomer came in who was not exactly welcomed by the leadership had ways to make them feel unwanted. But with Twitter today, anybody can go on Twitter and with 280 strokes can get their message across to the people. Would you say that Twitter and Facebook and all the rest of the social media platforms has really changed the paradigm that somebody who really wants to make a difference can?
I would say that it is always a tool. A tool depends on its user. You can have a Twitter account and not have many followers, not know exactly how to best utilize it, not communicate effectively, since 280 characters is 280 characters. That's a long sentence or two of them. You know what I mean? So it's always about the tool. I certainly believe that it has. That in a sense it can serve as a democratizing tool, but it all depends on the user and the message. You can have a great Twitter following and then just be talking about the kind of makeup that you're wearing or, you know, what kind of bike you're riding or what have you. You understand what I'm saying? It
uh-huh.
depends on the type of message and the kind of message that she communicated clearly, effectively, over and over and over again. Not only over Twitter, but more importantly, and this is a key, she did the work on the ground. And this is why I remember all the way back, and I'm sure that you can too, to the Dean days. Remember Howard Dean? When Howard Dean was he was the first as they were the technologies that we take for granted now were nascent or not even, you know, most of them weren't really existing when Howard Dean was around. But there were a lot of people who were in his campaign who just talked about technology for the sake of technology. And ultimately, we know that he, as a presidential candidate at least, he fizzled and went away. He certainly became the chair of the party, and he's still around, et cetera. But as a presidential candidate, he fizzled. It was when Obama came in where you had all the tools that were available to Dean just a little bit more developed, but they were used as a way to communicate an effective message. And ultimately, they were about mobilizing real people. It doesn't matter how many people retweet your message if those people aren't going to the polls, aren't pulling a ballot, you know, aren't voting for you, aren't giving you a dollar or two, aren't going to the protest, aren't going to another event on your behalf or volunteering for you. It doesn't matter how many retweets you get. So ultimately, it is not necessary. The tools are certainly good to know what they are, and there is a democratizing factor in the fact that they're so readily available, so that you don't have to pay to be on Twitter. But it's ultimately about the message and the user, I believe.
I remember hearing that Joe Crowley was instrumental in getting reunifying the Democrats in the Senate. Can you talk a little bit about that and why it's important?
Well, so Joe Crowley is not only the chair of the County Democratic Committee and the Democratic Party in Queens, but also as a heavy player in the state of New York and with a lot of relationships in labor, was one of the folks who played a very central role in establishing this deal the certain reunification for the Democratic Conference. So it was my understanding that he was in constant conversations with our leader as well as the former leader of the IDC, now deputy leader of our conference, Jeff Klein, and with the rest of the folks that were involved, and that he was ultimately nudged them to reunify and come back into the fold. So, I certainly know that he played a very important role, and we will that's where we are now, one Democratic conference again.
From your perspective, what was the reasoning behind him getting involved now, and why didn't he do it before?
Before, you'd have to ask people what their reasons are for doing something or not doing something before or after. To me, I have been on the record since 2011, when I first got sworn in and started serving as a senator, that we would be being a United Democratic Conference is the only way to actually move the state in a positive direction. It is the reason why I have been fighting to become part of the majority since I've been in the Senate, and the reason why I've always encouraged my colleagues to do the right thing and stay within the Democratic Conference. And I am glad that ultimately happened. You would have to search the person's mind, right? You'd have to ask them why they either chose to do it now and not before, and why they chose to get involved now and not before. But I know that I've always been on the record as saying that this is that for us to move positive in a positive direction, we need to be a United Democratic Conference.
You know, for people who say politics is boring, doesn't follow politics in New York State.
Does anybody?
Would you agree?
I'm sorry, Cynthia. Who says politics is boring? They might say government is boring, but politics is just. They might say politics is crazy, or some other adjective. But I haven't necessarily heard it described as boring. Certainly not during our current period of the orange madness.
Right. Do you have any predictions for January?
My prediction is that what we have, what many of us have been fighting for a long time, in my case, all the way back to 2003 when I joined the staff of the New York State Senate, because I'm not sure if you know, but I was a staffer in the New York State Senate long before I was a senator. So my prediction is that for those of us that have been fighting for that long, we will have a majority. Not only that, but more importantly, we will have a stable governing majority. We know very clearly, certainly my leader and many of my colleagues, certainly all the ones that I've spoken to, recognize that the electoral part, as hard as it has been, and it will be, that we never take it for granted, but that's the easy part. The easy part is going to be picking up enough seats, particularly on a year like we are doing right, like the year that we're having right now, where the clear response to the terrible things happening in Washington and just the way that the Republican Party has just failed the entire country, we have the ideas that many of us have been fighting for are coming more to the forefront, and the electorate is putting us in that position to be able to bring about policies that will actually make their lives better and not be divisive and destructive like the Republican ones are. So we know, however, that the electoral part is the easy part. Governing will be the difficult part. It will be the labor-intensive part, but it's a job that we're prepared to do and that many of us look forward to doing.
One important question is, you know, a lot of people, especially in primaries, sit back and don't even bother to vote. They think that their vote doesn't matter. What do you tell people who say that?
I tell them the stories of the there's at least six races I've been involved with in my life, not my own, but I've been involved in various races that have been won by as little as two votes. One of my colleagues, Victor Pichardo, who is an assembly member, he used to work in my staff. He used to be one of my community affairs representatives before he became an assembly member. He won his last election by two votes, two. Mm-hmm. So the idea that there's a couple of other there's one a state senate race many years ago in Queens. A guy by the name of John Sabini, who won by a couple of hundred votes. The lady who was the Speaker of the City Council in New York City, Melissa Mark Biberito, won her race, which I managed in 2005 when she won the City Council. She won that by less than 100 votes. So there have been, Andrea, got her the election, Andrea Stewart Cousins, her initial election, got stolen from her by 18 votes. So this is the type of thing that we're talking about. The reality is that on districts like this, that on races that are important, every single vote matters. So I would tell them all those stories, and I would tell them that ultimately I would then ask them whether they're registered to vote, whether the rest of their family is.
I remember when Obama left office, one of the things that he said was, carry a clipboard and vote. But the most important thing is, as far as I'm concerned, voting is important. But more people need to run for office. More people have to be embraced by the party, run for office, and have the skills. Do you agree?
I do. I think, listen, it's not just about running for office. It's about having the right people running for office. We need a more diverse population of people to be candidates and then to be eventual elected officials. I mean, the Senate Democratic Conference, for example, we have six Latinos in the state Senate and only one of them is a woman. And so when you think about that, there's only six of us in the entire state Senate. That's six of us out of 63. Of that, there's only one of them who's a woman. There's only, I believe, seven women, thankfully, including our leader, but there's only seven women in the Democratic Conference. And as far as women of color, then we're talking about something like four or five. So this is – and that means that we're not in a position to have all voices represented when we're making decisions regarding the entire state. So having a better and diverse group of people be part of the process and run is absolutely essential. However, I will say that it is necessary for people to certainly like jump into it, but jump into it knowing full well what you're getting yourself into. That which is one of the good things that's happening right now as a result of the Orange Madness, right? There's been so many people that have been activated that there's a lot of organizations, Wellstone Action, Indivisible, True Blue NYC, there's a whole bunch of organizations that actually take time to train people how to do this work. Getting elected, there's a certain type of skills, a certain number of skills that are necessary to be able to do this well. And so it being trained in it so you know what you're getting yourself into, knowing full well that you're going to have to work your butt off, you're going to have to raise money, you're going to have to talk to people, you're going to wear out shoes, you're going to, you know, you have to answer questionnaires, you have to think about the positions that you're going to take on different. I mean, there's a lot of things. So I do believe that more people should run, but more people should run that know what they're getting themselves into. And thankfully, there's a lot of people that are preparing other folks to do that.
Sure. That's important. So, you know, the rest of the election season is going to be very interesting, what happens in the primary and what happens after that. And then, of course, there's January. So I look forward to seeing you in January, maybe talking to you before that. So I wish you the best of luck in the Bronx, and I hope we get to talk to each other again soon. Thanks, Gustavo. Final thoughts?
Just final thought. Thank you so much, Cynthia, for continuing to, as you say, keep a focus on Albany. Next year is going to be a very, very key year, and I would suggest that everybody participate, go out there, knock on doors, help the candidate that you think best represents your community win. And then next year, pay attention because there's a lot of good things that are going to happen, but it's going to be a very difficult year for us, certainly. But we, in the Democratic Conference, are looking forward to the challenge. And I also look forward to speaking to you again real soon, Cynthia.
Thank you. Have a great day, and thank you, everybody, for listening. This is Focus on Albany, so if you like this show, follow it. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Have a great weekend, Senator. We'll talk again.
Be well, ma'am.
Thank you.